Some years ago, the social and political commentator Barbara Ehrenreich wrote a rather provocative essay for Time magazine on families. I think it hit pretty well when it comes to the often highly conflicted attitudes we as a society and culture take towards a family at present. I'll share a little bit of her words to get us launched for the next few minutes here. She wrote, "Theoretically and often, the family nurtures warm, loving feelings. Within the family, and often only within the family, individuals are loved for themselves, whether they are infirm, incontinent, infantile, or eccentric. At best, the family teaches the finest things human beings can offer and can learn from one another, generosity and love. But it is also a place where we learn nasty things, like rage and shame. Americans act out their ambivalence toward the family without ever owning up to it. Millions adhere to creeds that are militantly pro-family, but at the same time, millions flock to therapy groups that offer to heal the inner child from damage inflicted by family life. We are all, it is often said, in recovery. And from what? In some cases, our families." It was about 15 years ago that Ms. Ehrenreich penned these words, but they have much of the same ring of truth to them as they did when they were first written. They also point to the minefield that a well-meaning minister, like myself, most of the time, steps into in taking up a topic on the meaning of family, especially on Mother's Day. And knowing what I do of some of the stories, some of the life stories, some of the pathways that have brought many of you here, I also know that invoking such a topic as family calls forth a wide range of thought, wide range of emotions, memories, which are reflective of what Ms. Ehrenreich herself observes. In fact, the family ambivalence that she talks about in this essay is something I've often seen in a lot of the weddings and the funerals, memorial services I've done over the years. For both of these occasions have a way of bringing up family matters. And in the great majority of the cases, they have in fact both been very good and happy family matters. The celebratory and festive mood at a wedding usually includes a joyful celebration of the families that are coming together and a reaffirmation of the family ties on each of the couple. And at a funeral, memorial service, even as the passing of a life is mourned, there is again awfully a deeply appreciative acknowledgement of the family and all it's meant to the people in that setting. That's the case in most cases. I've also, on some other occasions, not that many, but on some, found myself dealing with situations where I'll be informed that certain family members don't want to sit next to other family members, or certain family members aren't speaking to one another, and things such as that, and I'm somehow supposed to be given a heads up on all that. And that can get a little dicey at times. Sometimes even more than a little dicey. And it points out to me just what a precious, and yet what a fragile, institution the family can be. Precious when it comes to providing us some of the basic things that we all need for our emotional and psychological, mental and spiritual health and well-being, and fragile also in terms of how easily it can be hurt, how easily it can be damaged or even shattered. Well, I posed my sermon title today in the form of a question: what is a family? I think I should at least try to answer it. I have become convinced in my dealings with families over the years that what primarily defines a family is much more a matter of function than it is of form. And by that I mean, a family is best understood in terms of what it does, more so than in terms of who happens to make it up. And when it comes to function, I think some of the language we used in our dedication service a little earlier speaks to that very well. I'll repeat again what I said a little while ago. Each human life is bound with others, and this is especially true within the family. It is here that each person is shaped and formed by all the interactions of affection, of act, and word. In the relationship of family, we receive our sense of worth and personhood, our sense of what is right and wrong, feeling of who we are, and what our unique place in the world is. I think those words are a pretty good summation of what a healthy family does. And I would say you can have any number of family configurations that can do that. It does not have to be one particular structure or one particular form held up above all others. I'm going to come back to that point in just a moment. But right now I'd like to spend a couple of more minutes on those dedication ceremony words, because when you think about it, they're also asking one heck of a lot. I'm a very human, and let's say a very fragile institution. To shape and form a person by all interactions of affection, act, and word. To be a place where one receives his or her sense of right and wrong. Their feelings of what they are and what their unique place in the world is. That's a lot of stuff. And this is what we expect of our families, in addition to their providing the material needs of life. And when you think a little more about it, it's not only children towards whom these expectations are directed. Even for adults, the family remains the basic unit to which we look for acceptance, and support, and respect, and trust, and love. We all need, that is to say, a place where we can go, where we're accepted unconditionally, just as we are. It's like that definition of home that Robert Frost offered in his poem, Death of a Hired Man. Frost's words were, home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. In this poem, it's the hired man, Silas, who is coming back to live with Warren and Mary, people with whom he has no blood ties at all. But it's the home, the family, if you will, to which Silas returns. And they welcome him home, which, as the poem played itself out, is the home where he dies. Jack, it's been great having you this morning. We'll catch you a little later. Yeah, bring it back a coffee hour, Jack. Okay. Yeah, home is, I love those words by Frost, the place where when you have to go there, they have to take you in. Place where you receive your unconditional acceptance. I would say another role of the family is that it serves as a place, it kind of serves as a launching pad from which we each have to push off in order to pursue our own lives. Consider these words by Peter Collier in a book he wrote titled Traits of a Healthy Family. Similar to some of what Barbara Ehrenreich said. Your family is what you've got. It is your limits and your possibilities. Sometimes you'll get so far away from it, you'll think you're outside its influence forever. Then before you figure out what's happening, it will be right beside you. Some people get crushed by their families. Others are saved by them. Crushed or saved or some of both. Mr. Collier makes a very wise observation that your family of origin is not something you ever completely walk away from. And this gets me to the point I just mentioned. Your family of origin, however constituted, however weak or strong, however functional or dysfunctional, is the basic social unit against which, or in the face of which, we define ourselves and take responsibility for our lives. I can speak to this in a very personal way. I grew up in a family where, whatever its imperfections and shortcomings, the positives far outweighed the negatives, and a place where I felt much more saved than I did crushed. But there also came a time when I had to push off from it. I had to say no to certain aspects of my family, loving as it was, in order to become the person I was striving to be. I had to make certain value choices, certain belief choices, certain lifestyle choices that were not altogether consistent with the ones that my parents had worked so hard and so lovingly to instill in me and my sisters. I had to disconnect, that is to say, at one point so that I could then come back and reconnect at another, which I believe I've been able to do. So drawing on that experience, I would say that yet another role of the family is to provide young persons who are coming of age a place to push off from. And that pushing off is not always painless. It's not always anxiety-free. but it still has to happen. And I think in a healthy family, that disconnecting as a young adult and then the reconnecting usually comes off as okay. You may sometimes think you're going to get there, but it does happen. So I want to briefly go back now to that earlier point I was making about how I think it is best to understand and evaluate families on the basis of what they do, rather than on how they are specifically made up. This is a major issue I have with so-called pro-family groups and organizations, like James Dobson's Focus on the Family. These folks seem to be so concerned, if not obsessed, with what the proper family structure is, more so than what a good family does, along the lines of what I've already said. Their whole opposition, for example, to same-sex marriages or unions is predicated on the idea that because a same-sex couple does not fit the supposedly God-ordained structure of what a family should be, according to what is often termed biblical family values, such couples are therefore destroying the American family. As an aside here, I remember a remark our Unitarian Universalist Association's president, Reverend Bill Sinkford, made an address to the delegates at one of our recent General Assemblies when he wondered out loud if this thing called biblical family values included King Solomon and his 700 wives. On a more serious note, I will readily grant the very sad truth that there are indeed some very real social and economic and cultural factors that work against the stability of the family in our society today. Things like young people escaping their own unstable families by having children of their own that they are ill-equipped to raise and so perpetuate a very sad kind of a cycle. Things like a working single parent struggling to make ends meet, trying to raise children. Any number of things threaten the family. Things like easy and seductive inducement into the drug culture. Of course there are serious threats, really serious threats, to the stability of today's family in America. But in the face of all this, it suggests, as Dr. Dobson and his organization does, that the greatest threat to the family in our country today are same-sex couples who want to be and who want to create families of their own. To me, that goes somewhere way past ludicrous. And on this note, I am very gratified that we have gotten to the point in our fine Granite State where same-sex civil unions are being given the weight of law. It is not the whole enchilada when it comes to full marriage equality, but it's a very significant step in that direction. And I look forward to the 1st of January of 2008 and the days thereafter when any same-sex ceremony I might officiate will also be one for which I can actually sign a legal document. Leaving that behind and moving to a close now, I believe it is a calling of people of faith, of people of many faiths, a calling of people of goodwill and compassion to affirm and value and support the many varieties of families in our midst today that are seeking to find positive and healthy expressions and ways of being. And I believe part of our calling here is to be a welcoming and affirming religious community for the many kinds of families and the many kinds of individuals who have made and who are seeking to make this congregation here their religious and spiritual home. For whatever families may have brought us forth, the fact is that we're all here right now, coming with both the fulfillments and the frustrations those families bestowed upon us. Some of us come here with family memories we love and we cherish, some with memories that are difficult to recall. We should be mindful here of the many kinds of families that make up the mosaic of our congregation and be welcoming and affirming of all of them, both on this Mother's Day and all the other days in the life of this wonderful religious community that we are. So I will finish then by recalling once again the charge I gave to the families in our child dedication ceremony, the one that I gave to Josh and Julie, to be a place where we receive our sense of worth and personhood, our sense of right and wrong, our feelings of who we are, and what our unique place in this world is. We each and all carry these with us from the moment we embark upon life until the moment we depart from it. My wish for us as a congregation is that we will continue to find amongst ourselves new and creative ways of living out this charge, so we may each and all move to greater and deeper levels of human fulfillment. The words of our closing hymn were written as a prayer for congregations and for the buildings that house them. But they are also words that work on at least two levels. They do speak to how we as a congregation strive to live out our life as a church family. And they also offer a prayer to many and varied families in our midst as well. So let's sing that together. It's hymn number 1.